Black revolutionaries, distillery owners, Italian fashion retailers, and Motown Grammy winners all share their best stories never before told in any other media outlets on Detroit Is Different. Visit DetroitIsDifferent.com or download the Detroit Is Different app on Apple's App Store or Google's Play Store.
Detroit Is Different, back in full effect with a guest that we've definitely had that shares good information. Always giving. Kofi Kenyatta, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, everything is well. Everything is well. So recently in the news, we've been reading across the newspapers and even the blogs. You're talking about guaranteed basic income for Detroit. What is that?
Absolutely. So guaranteed income is really a pretty simple concept. Essentially, it is recurring cash payments to a specific demographic. Mm-hmm. And so many of the guaranteed income pilots that you have taken place across the country may be doing $500 a month over the course of 12 months, 18 months, 24 months. What we're advocating for here in the city of Detroit is $1,200 a month over the course of 18 to 24 months.
Wow.
Now, as far as the demographic of Detroiters that funding will go to, well, that's part of the scope of work that we would want to engage in with our members, our community stakeholders, and then the potential funders.
So, all right. Now, you all remember COVID-19. It seems like it was a long time ago for a lot of people, but it was not that long ago. And those stimulus checks were really some strong stopgaps for a lot of communities like ours. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was songs, people talking about it, like, oh, got your stimmy. and that's just, you know, our own creative spin on things. But the stimulus payments helped in households that, you know, for what many may consider a small amount of money went a long way to the point where it even impacted the workforce, that people were making better decisions about starting their own businesses, what jobs they want to take. We saw people that manage fast food restaurants like, man, nobody wants to work here. It's like, well, do you created an environment that actually treats people with respect, the decorum. A lot of people are struggling and hate their jobs. Something like this really could help some families. And you work with Up Together. Up Together, if people don't know, is an organization that definitely stands for really supporting communities solving their own challenges, because a lot of groups and foundations and programs talk about helping the community, but Up Together is about helping themselves. And a lot of people that are labeled with being impoverished and struggle with the poverty, which I think we both agree is more of a symptom of this broken system and not something that people are imposing on themselves.
Yeah. Want to touch on two things real quickly there. Yeah. So you talked about COVID and the stimulus checks. Mm-hmm. One of the other important key policy moves that was engaged in during the course of COVID is the expanded child tax credit. Mm-hmm. And essentially what that did was up the amount. It also made it for individuals who weren't necessarily working, but had children in the household had the option to receive a monthly payment. And so with that expanded child tax credit, child poverty in America was cut over 50%.
Wow. Poverty
in the course of that year in 2021, child poverty was cut by 50%, a little over 50%. And so that just goes to show us that poverty is a policy choice. If the government at the snap of a finger can cut poverty in half for children, why aren't we doing these type of policies on an ongoing basis? Uncovered through COVID. Like, what are the actual possibilities that we can do when it's a necessity? When people are struggling, when people are getting laid off and they can't make ends meet and they don't have food in the home, they can't get to work. The offices are closed downtown. The government said, okay, we're going to do a stimulus check. We're going to come out with the CARES Act. We're going to come out with ARPA. And so what we're seeing is we don't want to lose that momentum. We don't want to stop reimagining what can be done because, as I mentioned all the time, Detroit has consistently been one of the top five most impoverished cities across this country. And that's a problem, right? And we keep trying the same old things, right? The same old tactics in order to reduce poverty, and it's not working. And so guaranteed income is a new initiative that should be explored and implemented in the city of Detroit as one tool that can be utilized to alleviate poverty, not only in the city, but across this country. And then we were talking about Up Together. Absolutely. We are firm believers that when individuals and communities have access to cash, choice, and community, but essentially we're just saying if you have access to resources and opportunities, and really if we just get out the way, that you're able to achieve socioeconomic mobility.
And that is one of the key pillars and why I brought that up, because a lot of the problems exist because these organizations become so top heavy. They have officers, departments, CEOs. I'm wondering, the city of Detroit right now has a sustainability office that just opened up under the executive office. All while we still owe back taxes to many Detroiters. But it's like the office of sustainability, the most sustainable thing could just be empowering the people, putting the money in their hands. Because we have another reality that's running concurrent across the nation, definitely here in Detroit. And that's the homelessness that exists in America. You know, you travel the world, you travel the country. And when you travel even the world and see homelessness in other places, but some more of the humanity that's treated for the population that's struggling, experiencing homelessness. And then just the dismissive nature, as if like we just ride around, drive around, look past. And I mean, these are some of the biggest cities in America. Like it's easy to be right, you know, Wall Street, the New York Stock Exchange, and homelessness.
Absolutely.
LA, movie sets not that far, movie stars, homelessness, Houston, Detroit, you know, like name the city, which tells you that obviously this is a social challenge with people not being able to experience the quality of life. And this rains bad on our society. And like most things in our communities, Black community experiences is the worst. So what are some of the outcomes you've seen through Up Together when people are empowered to make their own decisions? Because always the opposition comes usually in a Republican form, but I'm gonna go as far as to say just period is, oh, these people are lazy. They they didn't want to apply themselves. If they really wanted to work, you can get a job. What do you see when people are actually empowered with the money to make the decision?
Yeah, and so some of the pushback, most of it does come from the right or the Republican side of things, but there is some pushback on the left, right? There is this belief, this paternalistic model that we have to tell poor people what they should be doing in order to get themselves out of poverty. And so essentially we're reinforcing the false narrative that people are living in poverty because of their own failings. What you and I know, what Up Together knows, is that poverty is a systemic force. When we talk about the racial wealth gap, when we talk about lack of living wages, when we talk about affordability issues, when we talk about maternal and infant health outcomes for Black moms, when we talk about all these disparities that exist, I don't think all of these are by happenstance. A lot of this is by design, by intentional racist and deficit policies that were created to have a permanent underclass that our society feeds upon. Right. So when we talk about when people do have access to resources, when we do provide a little bit amount of money on a monthly basis to our households, we see a few things, and you touched on them before. Individuals have the opportunity to find better employment. They have the time and the flexibility to engage in that entrepreneurial spirit. I know when you were starting up, how could you have benefited from an extra $1,000 or even $500 a month when you were building Detroit is different? It could have been a game changer, right? You probably would have got to where you achieve your goals a lot quicker if you had that cash infusion. Health outcomes improve. Individuals have a greater sense of well-being when they have access to resources. And so a lot of people on the right and left talk about the cost of this and how much will it cost. And so I want to reframe that conversation and talk about the cost of inaction, the cost of poverty, the cost of criminalizing our people for living in poverty, the cost. We spend over $1 trillion in trying to help our children, right? We spend billions of dollars as a country to address affordable housing, and it's still an issue, as you know, here in the city of Detroit.
Most
we spend
definitely.
Billions of dollars on water sustainability. We spend billions of dollars on all these social programs, and poverty as a nation has barely moved, right? is still at the same percentage. Detroit is still in the 30% of Detroit is living in poverty, and it's been like that for decades. Mm-hmm. And so it's about how we're utilizing our funding. If a budget is a moral document, then what are our values as a city? What are our values as a country? And so it's coming upon us and the broader community to really force our elected officials to see the value in honoring the dignity and resourcefulness of our people.
And I definitely know you study this. You're in policy. You're meeting. You're actually engaging with some of the people and giving them understandings for what, you know, me, I'm thinking, you should know this. You should know this. And it's we don't know whether, you know, some of it is so much ignorance to it and really engaging in some of these struggles. But to me, I'm seeing just through, like I say, the homelessness situation, like I believe those numbers have to be increasing because it's so much more in my face now of what the struggles are. And living in a community like mine right here on Clements, you know, 48238, like this is one of those neighborhoods that struggles with what they would label as extreme poverty. This is one of those neighborhoods where, you know, free lunch is just like blanketed. Detroit itself, that's where poverty is. Like through Detroit Public Schools, every child gets free lunch. When we were in high school, it was like, okay, oh man, you a poor kid, you get free lunch. But those kids really need that free lunch. It's really helping. You know, those two meals for breakfast and lunch could be the only meals a kid has sometimes, hence that need to go to school and stop gaps like that. When you talk about children and then allowing the parent the opportunity to pour into their child just with that stopgap, that $500. That $1,200 a month. Now I can rest a little bit assured that I have my rent covered, and I don't have to take up three shifts and then do odd jobs. Or nowadays, you know, I'm driving for Uber with my two kids in the back seat and stuff. Like, this is an American reality.
Let's talk about that for a minute, right? You talked about if a parent had $500 a month, they wouldn't have to work two or three jobs. Well, why are they working two and three jobs in the first place? Because that one job is probably not paying them a livable wage. And so they're working two and three jobs just to afford their basic necessities. Right. We're talking about housing, we're talking about food, we're talking about transportation. So if you're working two and three jobs to just cover the basic necessities, how much time do you have to feed into your children? How much time do you have to make sure that your children are being rooted in culture, that you're helping your children with their schoolwork, that you're helping them with their extracurriculars, right? And so when we talk about, we throw so much money in the school system, right? But it's going to take a two-gender approach. You know, how are we helping the entire household? And I don't want it to be confused that I think guaranteed income is a silver bullet. It is not the only solution, right? So we have to talk about the root cause of poverty. We have to talk about the root causes of limited economic mobility, upward economic mobility. And so we you know, that's a nuanced conversation as well, right? But that said, when we talk about living wages, that's one of the main problems. Individuals are working, maybe not working jobs that they would rather work in, but they're forced to, obviously. But they're not earning enough to cover their basic necessities, and they're definitely not earning enough in order to thrive and achieve their goals as they deem fit or within the time frame that they would like to. And so we need to tackle that, and we also need to talk about progressive taxation, right? So when we talk about funding a guaranteed income at a federal level or state level, we have to talk about the tax code. We have to talk about how we are utilizing the existing resources as the government has available to it, and how are we redistributing those dollars. And so that's another conversation that we have. But ultimately, the data is there. I think most of the elected officials that we come into conversation with realize that when you honor people with dignity and choice and provide cash transfers, that more than likely they'll do well. But there is a negative stereotype. You know, someone mentioned, oh, what if they just utilize the resources to go gamble or to do drugs? But no one asked the Illiges when they got $800 billion in tax abatements from the city of Detroit and like the state of Michigan.
Yeah, to your son that struggles with opioid addiction, you know. So I agree.
Yeah, but, like, but we don't ask those same questions against billionaires and corporations.
And furthermore, and not just that, I'm going to step into this one. We don't ask them that question, but we're not even necessarily holding them accountable for whether or not what they're proposing is successful. If you look at our current executive body office of the city of Detroit and the amount of people that don't live in Detroit, but quote unquote work for Detroit. We look at our police department, people that, you know, don't live in Detroit but work for Detroit. We look at, like, across the board, almost like the higher up you go, these are people that aren't even living in the community.
Yeah.
So they're imposing ideas and stuff like this, just like, it's like theoretical. That's like, the problem. Who knows?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, yeah. Kari Frazier, I'm the communications person for Mars and Martians. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what they're doing, but to me, this look good, and it will connect with them. I'm not in that community. Yeah. You have to be ingratiated here to really know what happens. And then furthermore, it also shows the disrespect in the misunderstandings of a person to just, quote unquote, make it seem like, oh, this person is lazy. That's why they're in this position. There are many people in some of the most wise, some of the most giving, and some of the most committed people are some of the people that can be labeled as impoverished, because I believe that they're more motivated instead of by the dollar, they're motivated by passion. Mm-hmm. They're motivated by commitment. These are the types of people you want to be in position to assist children, to assist people. I mean, think about how many times we've heard a lot of people that say, you know, man, I wish I could be a teacher, but I wouldn't make enough money for my kids and my family, but I really want to work with kids. So now that person is in our community, but not connecting with the children in our community. And now we just got a person that's connecting, like, oh, you know, you got a couple college credits and I can step in for a second, terrible, make a couple dollars, you know. And this is a reality. And I'm definitely not throwing shade at some of the people I know working within that system, but definitely shade at the way that this is coming about, that we're valuing people basically based on money instead of valuing them for what we can do, their passions, their creativities, their commitment to our community. Like, this is something that can really empower a community if more people could, as that term, guaranteed, rest assured that I'm gonna have my lights on when I go home.
Man, don't feel bad about throwing shade. Right. Because, like, I work within a system. I work within the nonprofit system. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's enough shade to be thrown around to all these systems, because a system is just a collective of individuals upholding that system. And so if you're not utilizing your position, either you have a position of privilege or not, if you're not doing everything within your capacity with what you have available to you to bring about change for the betterment of your people, then what are you doing? Right. Mm-hmm. Whether you're in the educational system, whether you're in electoral politics, educational system, the criminal justice system, we all have a role to do. And you touch something, because I get tired of talking to people who don't realize their own power. Right. I'm talking to, like, people who have real power, but they're always passing the buck. Right. Because they don't want to rock the ship. Right. Mm. They don't want to make too many waves. And I think that cowardice is what's really holding us back.
Mm, that's deep. And it's so weird, because I always, you know, and you've been noticing me, like, I'm pushing the envelope even further. If anybody knows me, that's just my personality. And
we can do so and be strategic, too.
I mean, it's definitely strategic. But I definitely feel, me personally, I feel way more aligned with my people in my neighborhood.
Absolutely.
You know, my neighbor next door to the podcast studio, he is... Boy, if you ever want to seen the show Hoarders and all that stuff, I mean, you got a lot of dogs and all types of stuff.
You put my hands out there like that?
I will, definitely. But he's part of my community. When something happens on my block, I still engage with him. You know what I'm saying? The other people in my neighborhood, you know, and we're connected. And I'm glad that they're a part of my community. And I'm not afraid of, I'm not shying from. I feel so comfortable here. But I also know that some of the things that they're dealing with are just so oppressive. When I looked at my DTE bills this past winter, I was thinking to myself, as much as I'm glad I'm in a position where I can pay it, all I think about is the house down the street with the kids in it and what I can do, you know? And then these are prideful people, so it's hard to just, like, walk up and say, hey, here goes something on something. You know what I'm saying? You know, I give them some collards from my garden, some tomatoes from my garden. You know, anytime I can give a tax to some of the kids, I will. But it's like something like this, I think, would really have them embrace and ingratiate being down here and have more pride to do some different things in and around our community. You know, fix up some of the things that need to be fixed up and apply those skill sets in our neighborhood instead of taking all of our talents and having that go on the outside of the skirts and outskirts of our community. So
I was talking to a group of seniors out in Southwest Detroit last week about this and about other things. And the topic came up around the last outage. And you're probably like, which one? Right? It's been so many given DTE's porous infrastructure, right?
Exactly.
And so these were senior citizens, right? Mm-hmm. And like I've been working in the social sector. I'm used to hearing a lot of tragedy, a lot of stories about the ills with our society. But listening to those seniors talking about what they had to endure on their own with little to no help, right? Yeah. You know, you're a senior citizen, you're 70, you're 80 years old, your power goes out, you have an oxygen tank, right? You have medical equipment that needs to be plugged in. You don't have transportation, right? Yeah. You have to travel, you have to find a warming center, you have to do X, Y, Z. One woman said her husband is disabled, he has a lift. So he couldn't go anywhere, so she had to stay with him until they could get help, right? And so we talk about how America, like, leaves behind certain groups of people, right? And that's one population that is severely neglected, not just in Detroit, but across this country. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about, well, you know, what would it have been, what would it have meant to you if you had access to a few dollars during that moment?
To get a hotel.
It would have made all the difference in the world, right? Mm-hmm. And so I can't tolerate anybody in America talk about the lack of resources. It's about how we prioritize the utilizations of the resources that the richest country on earth has, right? And so, but it's, unfortunately, it's up to us to demand that our elected officials and our government is responsive to the needs of our people in making that happen and making sure we put the right people in place. But no matter who's there, we have a job to hold them accountable and make them responsive to the needs of the people.
I agree. And then also, if you end up in one of those positions, knowing you have influence and know that the love and the appreciation that you get from the people is so much more than what you think you're getting from the machine or the establishment or the system. Because the system's just going to want more of you, whereas the people will give you a different type of love, that connection. And even as you talked about the senior thing, it is a lot of seniors are in communities like mine because they have the option. It's kids begging them, hey, please come out here, move to Farmington with me. Move to Novi. Why are you still there? Because I know here, I've been here, I bought this, and I want to stay here. This is the community I know. So so that even connects certain people from the outside to have to come back and recommit, because some of the elders in our community are seeing bigger visions of our place and space is in our communities and not outside our communities. So even when that happens, it's a different type of connection, a different type of commitment. You know, and that's real. I'm seeing it. I live in a neighborhood like that. And I know that, like, that extra stopgap of that, you know, $500, $1,200 could actually have someone being able to caretake for that auntie, for that uncle, for that dad, for that mom, for that grandma, for that granddad, you know, like, and that is something that's collective, something and powerful, something along the lines of really the traditions of our people.
Yeah, and it's important that we talk about that community aspect and then really talking about what we're trying to do now with Guaranteed Income Pilot. I think there was some pushback that we received from the cities that they wouldn't be able to use ARPA dollars because they wouldn't be able to sustain it once the ARPA dollars have gone on. And so, one, you know, over 100 cities across the country are doing Guaranteed Income Pilots, and almost 90%, a little over 90% of those that are utilizing public dollars are using.
Time out.
Yeah.
Let me step in and let me speak directly to Mayor Duggan's State of the City address.
I thought something was over the camera, using, bro.
of he's using ARPA funds for. Do you all know that it's going to be a Detroit dog rescue that's using ARPA funds? It's in his State of the City address. You can go to YouTube and he talks about it and how important this is. And this is another gripe. Is me, Kari. And I like animals. I like plant life. I like everything. But it's always been a gripe that I feel like dogs are more honored than black people. Now, this is a tangent thing of Kari. So this is a Kari statement. You know what I'm saying? Not even a Detroit is different statement. I think that. And this is sad that we're finding ARPA dollars for something like that that would definitely have to be a sustainable program. But we can't find programs to help the people that have already been overtaxed and overassessed. people that you know are struggling with poverty. You know, we're labeled the poorest, one of the poorest cities continuously. Mm-hmm. You don't want to help them, but you want to help the stray. Guess what? The dog is stray because the person probably didn't have enough of the resources to keep the dog in the house. Like, some of this stuff is just goofy, the way that we're trying to solve for symptoms of what we know the root cause is, you know?
Yeah.
So nah, my you, bad. That using ARPA funds is ridiculous to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's not even the point, right? That's a reality, right? Because we know that many cities are utilizing the CARES Act ARPA dollars for these type of programs. But all we want them to do is utilize a small portion of the ARPA dollars for this pilot. So we want at least $1.5 million, shooting for three.
How much ARPA money did Detroit get?
A little over $800
million. Yep, about $845 million. Yeah. We did those Tell Us Detroit talks
all
summer last year. So $845 million. You can't take $3 million of that. Not to mention that right now it's only like I think about $5 million that's spent, and those $5 million was spent on consultancy decide what to do with the money.
And we got a match. We got some philanthropic partners that is, you know, wanting to work through us to partner with a public entity. So
bring that back. Bring that. Repeat what you just said.
So we have.
If Detroit puts $3 million in.
Yeah. We have partners that are willing to support that effort with private dollars, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm not at liberty to discuss which partner, but there's money at the table, right? And there are other possibilities. There have been possibilities and opportunities throughout the years that, unfortunately, Detroit has wavered on. But, you know, this is kind of us putting our hand in the sand, flipping the sand, whatever the term is, and saying, look, we got to get this done. And it's not because I'm not even expecting the city of Detroit to sustain this. Mm-hmm. What I do need the city of Detroit's help with is helping us change the narrative, dispelling the narrative that you can't trust people living with poverty to lead their own lives, to determine their own destiny. I need help from the city of Detroit to change that narrative and to say we are boldly going to invest in our citizens just as eagerly as we're going to invest in corporations, right? And then helping, you know, change that narrative, build the momentum, not just with elected officials, but more importantly with the community, so we can get something done at the state level. And the ultimate goal is, of course, the federal level. But we're starting right here at home. We're starting in other communities. And Detroit and Michigan can't continue to lag behind because the needs are so pronounced here. It makes no sense for us not to be trying all the possibilities, all the policy tools and solutions that we haven't tried before in order to get the results that we desire. Or we should be desiring, right? Because these aren't silly people, right? And they see the data, and they know we've been trying the same things for decades, and to the outcomes that we witness. So that's my pessimistic side speaking, but I want to hope and pray that we can partner with the city of Detroit, the state of Michigan, the state of Michigan, in order to get this done.
And I hope so too, because what you're saying and as you understand this, match funds, meaning that if the city puts up $3 million, it'll be matched by another organization. Sometimes this just happens in anything. You need a what we call a proof of concept that it could happen. This would be the pilot proof of concept that if this happens, you've seen the successful impacts it's made on the lives of these people in this program. So if we expand it, it will heighten the quality of life for these families. That's what's needed. You need to basically have it so you see it, and then you see it and it disproves all of the, oh, you know, that's just going to be more money for them to, you know, buy drugs and be in a gang. Whatever, whatever narrative, you know, Fox News probably has about people in Detroit, you know. So, like, it won't be that. We get this proof of concept. We get that proof of concept in front of people where they can see it. They see the positive change that it's making and the hearts and minds of people to even further connect, the program will expand.
Yep.
And as that program expands, it just heightens the quality of life here. Where it's like, wow, when people have enough money to make better decisions, they're raising their kids better. Mm-hmm. They're keeping better care of themselves. Mm-hmm. They're keeping better care of their homes. They're keeping better care of their community. And they're actually now have some time to invest in the school. So that those days of those school monitors and the crossing guards and all of that stuff, you know, we're going to get a whole new community just by some of this rest and easy. And like you say, this isn't a catch-all, everything will help, but it's a start to be a change in some quality of life for people that are struggling, have some shame about it, and are at a point, like some of them, like in a defeatist state of mind because the pressures of poverty have you in survival mode.
Yeah.
And survival mode is just not a space to stay where the decision making it can connect and you're making those best decisions. Survival mode, we know about survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and it's so much more than fight or flight to living.
Yeah. I mean, you touched on a lot there, but I absolutely agree. One tactic is to share the data and information and hopefully get people empowered to buy in, you know, changing hearts and minds. And then there's another tactic, which I'm more supportive of, and that's building power with those that don't need convincing. I didn't have to convince you that this is a good idea because we are value aligned, right? Mm-hmm. And I believe there are more of us out there. And mm-hmm. so opportunities like this to help get the word out helps build that momentum, help build that power. And so to the powers that be, can't say no because the people are supportive, right? And you talked about school, you talked about safety. You know, the safest communities aren't the communities that are over-policed. Those are the communities that are well-resourced, right? Mm-hmm. Detroit is, we have a lot of money floating around through public dollars, philanthropic dollars, but are the people being resourced the way they need to be?
No.
Right? And this is beyond direct cash. This is beyond guaranteed income, but are the people being resourced? Are we investing in the housing trust fund the way it needs to be invested in? Are we investing in some of the environmental issues that our people care about in an adequate manner? Mm-hmm. And I would envision that most people would say no, that are involved in those fights, involved in those struggles. And so collectively, I think we have to sync up and move forward with not just, you know, fighting over, you know, these ARPA dollars, but coming together to build a strong enough body to where we can demand, all right, what we need in order to thrive as a community. And that's really the ultimate end game, is how does our community come together? I don't know if we'll ever move with one voice, but how can we move collectively to achieve goals and a vision for the people that's going to be beneficial long term? And how do we lay that foundation? All right, we may not see it, but are we laying the foundation for our children to witness that? And I know we talked about laying the foundation a lot. And so how are we building and supporting institutions that our children, our grandchildren can move forward? And so that's what I think about. And I know this is kind of off topic, but it's all correlated, right? Mm-hmm. And right now we're just trying to get resources directly to the people.
Respect. All right, so people watching, they want to connect. How do they connect? What do they do to support? What's the next step?
Man, first thing you can do to support is hit up your councilman, council person, man or woman, contact the mayor's office, tell them that you are in support of guaranteed income as a pilot, and ask them where they stand on it. But that's number one call to action. If you want to join us as we have community events, shoot me an email at Kofi@uptogether.org. Kofi@uptogether.org, one word, and I'll get you plugged in into some of the efforts that we're going to be having going on throughout this year until we get this done. And then we got another project that we're working on at the state level. But right now, we got to get this done.
Okay, and don't be surprised. I'm going to pitch it to them because now that I know community events go, you know a lot of studios coming back. We do this. And I think June 29th, you're going to see something connected to this because the topic is a hot one. And it's definitely.
Hopefully a celebration in June, man.
Yeah.
You already know, man. Yeah, we don't get it done. Yeah.
All right. Peace be. Thank you.
Peace. Appreciate it.
Black revolutionaries, distillery owners, Italian fashion retailers, and Motown Grammy winners all share their best stories never before told in any other media outlets on Detroit Is Different. Visit DetroitIsDifferent.com or download the Detroit Is Different app on Apple's App Store or Google's Play Store.